And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
The final race, and they're off. The roar of the crowd here in New York at the Big A, and hard scent is assume nothing who gets the rail position. Tiz Marcus is going to be stalking too wide. Joining them, that's Sarah Shaman is out wide of three wide in Life and Light. No choice but to be very wide around that turn. Just in behind them comes Trusty Rusty, and then in between horses comes Peak as they get set to work to the backstretch here. 132 years of thoroughbred racing past the one-mile chute and to the backstretch, where fans and bettors have witnessed some of the greatest horses, the connections. They've come with their friends and family here to Aqueduct to celebrate this great sport. Assume Nothing is in front, is up by a half length. To the outside, still challenging, Tiz Marcus is a close-up second, out wider, Sarah Shaman in third. At the rail, there's Trusty Rusty. Peak is in between horses, out wider. Now moving forward to Centavo, and towards the inside of that one, Sharp Spark. At the rail, High Tide, the trailer, Concord Spirit. They work into the far turn one final time. The future's on the horizon, but the present is now here at Aqueduct, and Assume Nothing's got the lead. Is a neck in front of Tiz Marcus, who's catching with every stride. Also chased along. Here comes Sarah Shaman with a three wide run. Trusty Rusty is down towards the inside as they approach a quarter mile left to go. They reach the top of the stretch here at Aqueduct for one final time in front of the crowd, and the leader, Assume Nothing, is trying to gut things out. Sarah Shaman to the outside, Trusty Rusty trying to make up ground too, Tiz Marcus, but Assume Nothing inside the final 16th. Assume Nothing front running and wins the final race held at this majestic racetrack, New York City's racetrack, the Big A, better known as Aqueduct.
From the heart of Queens to the ears of sports fans everywhere, this is Sports Kings from Queens. Strap in because the Kings are in session. Today is Tuesday, June 30th. This is episode 242. I'm Gino, joined by my co-hosts Kevin and Darren. Please catch us wherever you get your podcasts. Like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Give us a like, join our pages. We'd like to hear from you. Leave us some comments, questions. We'll get back to you. Tonight we go around the world of sports. World Cup in full force action going on. We're in the round of 32 right now. Kev, tell me about how we got here. We got a couple of points before we get to the round of 32. We're in it now, but give me a couple of points about how we got there.
Yeah, let's just first touch base with the U.S. last Thursday, Group D. They did, as we thought, maybe they were going to do Wednesday night. Pochettino did not play any of the guys on yellow cards. Basically, I think he changed out 9 of the 11 starters. And then, to me, they got a lot of the other guys in there. They gave up the early goal, took a 2-1 lead, and then Turkey came back. And then goal in the 98th minute to give Turkey the win. To me, yeah, the defense looked pretty bad for a lot of the game. I thought some of the other guys that came in and played were okay. Berhalter was okay. Pulisic, I think the best thing with him was that he came in as a sub in the 60th minute and looked healthy. And I think he'll be good to go the rest of the World Cup. I think that was the biggest thing to come out of it. Nobody suspended, and they're getting ready for Bosnia-Herzegovina Wednesday night. Darren?
Yeah, I thought Berhalter looked a little better than okay. I thought he was actually pretty solid out there. I kind of like what I saw from him. The weakness on the team for the most part, I mean, Pepe didn't seem like he got anything going up front without Pulisic really giving him that help up front. I thought McKennie was good the whole match. He was the only starter that really played. I mean, the other one would be counted as Pepe, who started game two. I mean, but you wouldn't even consider him a starter because if Pulisic is playing, he's not even starting. And then the defense was where I thought the weakness was. You see the difference when they don't have the big three back there. And you see the difference between Weah and Dest, who was it was a conversation beforehand of should they start Dest or Weah. But you watch Dest. Is such a magician with the ball. And you watch Weah, he just was offside all night. And when he wasn't, he got the ball taken away from him left and right, Kev. I was very disappointed what I saw from Tim Weah, who was a starter on this team 4 years ago.
He was offside, what, 4 or 5 times, it felt like? And like I said, gave up the ball way too easily.
Yeah, I mean, that was the last spot. It was like, oh, who's going to start, Dest or Weah? They were going back and forth. Now watching them, you're like, I don't even know how this was a debate.
Yeah.
You know, Dest is a magician with the ball.
You know what, to me, they got everybody playing time. That was the important part. This way, God forbid somebody gets hurt, somebody gets out early or something. They have a better idea now who they can go to and who they may be able to trust. And even some of the defensive guys, I mean, some of them may not have looked good, but you put them in there with 3 of the starters, they might look a little better than with all 4 of them.
I thought Miles Robinson looked pretty good, by the way. I thought he was fine, but the lack of having Chris Richards back there, who's just that big guy that makes everything work, I think, and Ream, just because of his veteran leadership, you see the difference, and you saw the open spaces, basically, is the best way I could describe it from watching soccer for the last month. You hear about open space, and we were seeing it, right, G? I mean, it looked like they seemed like they would be able to pass into open spots the whole night.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, then elsewhere, you know, Group D, we also had Australia, Paraguay, scoreless, which, you know, they played like they were scoreless and playing for the tie. I felt like that was a nothing game as opposed to other ones that we can talk about later. Group E, the big news was probably Ivory Coast getting through the knockout round. Group F, you have the Netherlands, Japan, and Sweden all get through. And guess what? They didn't really last too long.
Nope.
We'll get to that. Listen,
I don't blame Sweden. They had a tough matchup.
Yep. Group G was very interesting. Belgium had the early win to advance. Or not early. They all played at the same time in the same group. They advanced easily with the easy win over New Zealand. Egypt, Iran. Egypt advanced. Iran needed a win to really clinch their way through. They had the goal, what they thought was a game-winning goal, scored in the 93rd minute. And it took a good 2.5 minutes of VAR review to overturn that goal. Darren, what do you think of the overturn there?
Actually, I still didn't think it was offside. It was real close. Egypt controlled the game for much of it, I thought. I thought Egypt was the more attacking team. I thought Iran sat back and played more of a counter-punching type of style. It's so close on that one. I didn't really think he was offside. I can see why you would say it, but I think when it's that close, I wouldn't have overturned it, in my opinion.
What's interesting is some of the other leagues around the world, when they do this, they have like a offsides line, which is, you know, 2-3 inches.
Yep.
That if you're sort of on that line, you know, sort of gives you that leeway of saying, yeah, he really wasn't, rather than this really hard and fast concrete line, which, you know, is still for interpretation, I think.
And it's, I'd rather see that little leeway there. It's not straight on every time, Kev. It's not always, you know, you can't tell by the angle. That's why it's hard to say.
Yeah.
I feel Iran got robbed.
I thought they got robbed too. So they thought they were advanced for about 2.5 minutes. Goal taken away. So 1-1, they needed some help. We'll get to that in just a minute. Group H, Spain, and I think the big thing where was Cape Verde advancing for the first time. Mm-hmm. Group I, France won easily over Norway. Norway rested a lot. The big news from that game, I think, was Dembele getting the hat trick. Because if they can get that second score in case Mbappe's not playing well, which, you know, for Mbappe may only be scoring 1 goal rather than 2 or 3. But, you know, Dembele's so good. If he gets going too, boy, the France becomes dangerous.
Olivia, I mean, the whole team is good. I mean, they just move so well in space.
We'll save Jay for last because that was the last group to play. K, Portugal, Colombia both needed a tie. That was also a 0-0 game, but that game had like 30 shots. So the two of them were actually trying to play as opposed to some of the other ones. Congo won over Uzbekistan to also get through. Group L, you had England, Croatia, and Ghana get through. And that was interesting because, you know, Croatia for a while, when they got the lead and England was tied, Croatia moved up to first, and then they were out of it for a minute, and they moved to second. I mean, it was back and forth the whole game. So those three advanced. Then we come down to the last games on Saturday night, last spot. Argentina won 3-1. The big news from that one, Messi came in the 60th minute and scored on the free kick to give him 6 goals in the tournament. And then Austria and Algeria. This one, both teams needed a tie. Neither one played that way for the first 75 minutes. Austria goes up 1-0, Algeria ties it. Austria goes up 2-1, Algeria ties it. And from about the 75th minute to about the 90th minute, it felt like they were content to go, yeah, 2-2, we're good. And then all of a sudden, Algeria, I think, lulled them to sleep. And all of a sudden, bang, 93rd minute, they score, which would have given Algeria the 2, would have knocked out Austria and put Iran in. So again, Iran was in the knockout group. A minute later, Austria comes back, cross, headed to save it from going out to the front and the header in. And all of a sudden, Austria ties it, and Iran's back out. I mean, that was a wild, wild finish to that game, especially when, you know, Austria was playing the last minute for their lives.
But they found a way to counter and score, which was pretty huge. Against a good defensive team like Algeria, that's not a weak defensive team.
Yeah. So that was a great – so we had a good finish Saturday, and that sets up the knockout stage. So, Darren, any comments or any thoughts about anything that I may have overlooked?
No, I mean, listen, the fact of the matter is, obviously, we're about Team USA. Obviously, you would have liked to have seen them go 3-0. They never have done that in the group stage. For a while, it looked like they could very easily do it. They just seemed to get a little lax. It seemed like that last minute lasted forever where the goal went up against them, but it's just the way it goes. I was talking to my brother-in-law, who's not a soccer guy in any stretch, or football, whatever you want to call it. And he's like, so let me get this straight. Only the referee knows when the game ends? So I'm like, yeah. He goes, so there's no chance. So he goes, there's always a chance of some sort of like turmoil. I said, absolutely. That's the way it works. The referee can keep this thing going as long as he wants. And it's just like one of those things. He goes, so nobody else can see it. Just the one guy. Just the one guy. But that's what it is. That's what the sport is. You feel like – exactly. You feel like Paraguay played Germany, right? And the way the U.S. kind of dismantled Paraguay. And, you know, different matchups and scores change the way teams play and all that type of stuff. But you feel like the U.S. is 9, you know, or 10, I should say, should be able to play with anybody. And not anybody. I mean, they're not as good as France and not going to be up there with Argentina. And, you know, they're not going to be at that level. But you feel like most of the teams that they're going to be facing earlier on are teams that they could get by. That's what I learned in that first in the bracket stage, you know, I mean, in the group stage, is that the U.S. can be competitive with almost anybody. The depth is pretty good and the talent is there. That was the biggest thing I would say.
All right, then we get to the knockout stages. Sunday, Canada and South Africa put on an entertaining 0-0 matchup until Eustachio in the 92nd minute scores for Canada, giving them a 1-0 win. Gina, I think you were watching some of that game.
Absolutely.
What did you think of the game?
Listen, back and forth. Canada stayed with them the whole game. I thought South Africa played a great game. Canada, at the end of the day, I thought they were on their heels towards the end of that game. I didn't think they were going to pull this out, I have to tell you. And then, you know, it's a shot outside the box. I mean, first off, the pass comes in, and the rebound comes way out. He gets it. He's outside the box, top of the goal box, boom. And 92nd minute, and Canada's up 1-0, and it's enough.
Yeah.
And Canada's moving on. You know, honestly, I don't know what you thought, but I can tell you, I thought as we got, it was probably towards probably the 80th minute. I thought Canada was really starting to, they started looking a little weary out there. I was starting to get worried. I didn't think they had enough to actually win the game, but they held on and they got that goal, the late goal, and they hung on. So
I thought they were going to hold on and go to extra time, but they got that late goal.
Yeah.
Honestly, that's a matchup Canada has to win, and they did.
They do.
I mean, yep. To be perfectly honest, because I think the Canada team 4 years ago, more talented than this one. But at the same time, Canada got a nice little draw here. They did enough to get this matchup. And to be the only – there's something special about being the only game on the stage for the day. You're the feature game, opening day of the knockout stage. And, you know, the fact that – I mean, not that South Africa's a bad team. They're certainly not. They had never made it through either. Neither squad had ever made it through before. But that was a matchup that, you know, Canada on home soil – or they were on home soil. They should have been, but they weren't. They ended up playing, I think, in California, I believe. But they had to have that win, and they got it. So good for them. They keep the dream alive.
Yep. Monday, we started off with Brazil and Japan. Japan surprisingly took the 1-0 lead going into the half. Brazil scored 56th minute, and then Martinelli deep into stoppage time, 95th minute, to pull that one out for Brazil 2-1. Again, the game that the second half, especially Brazil dominated that second half. It felt like it was just a matter of time.
Well, I mean, the Blue Samurai came out really strong in that first half. I thought they played well. And Japan's fast. Brazil is just so skilled. It's just, you know, it's one of those things where Japan has the speed, but Brazil has such a skill advantage. And Martinelli's goal, I thought Suzuki got his hand on a lot of on both goals. I think he did, and he just wasn't able to do enough with him. I thought Suzuki was great. It just, there's only so much one guy can do with that big a net, that kind of space. And it was a perfect touch by Martinelli, too.
Paraguay, Germany. Oh, sorry.
At that point, no, that's okay. Two games, goals so far, both games scores in extra time.
Yep.
Game three,
Paraguay, Germany. A game where Paraguay really played all 11 behind the ball.
Yeah.
A little counter once in a while. They did get the one goal early. Germany countered 1-1, and you thought Germany. I mean, it felt like they had the ball the entire time in Paraguay's half of the field. They just couldn't get anything going, really challenging the net. Goes to penalty kicks. Germany misses a couple of early. Paraguay has chances on the fourth and fifth penalty kick to win. Miss both. And then goes to the sudden death penalty kicks. Tom missed. Canali made it for Portugal, and they win on penalty kicks. Gina.
Paraguay, not Portugal.
I'm sorry.
Even before penalty kicks, in the overtime, Germany had a head ball goal taken away.
That's right.
That was the one that Ta had. He had the goal taken away for goalie interference.
Yes.
One of the players pushed the goalie. Could have been questionable. I don't know.
I think it was the right call.
So do I. But it was.
You don't want to see it called there, but I think it was the right call. I had no dog in the fight.
It's funny when you go to the studio at that point. It was in the first half of extra time. So they go in that halftime break here of extra time. And they're in the studio. And the goalie says it's not interference.
Schmeichel. Yeah.
And the offensive player says, no, it was interference.
I know.
And to me, if two guys in the studio can look at it and both have different opinions – boy, that really makes it hard to overturn what was originally called on the field. I mean, very controversial overturn, that one.
Well, here's the thing. It's a controversial overturn, right? But it's also a controversial goal if they keep it.
Yeah.
There's no winning it in any way with that, because do you want to let somebody win on the interference or perceived interference, or do you want to take something away on a perceived interference? I agree with you, Kev. I think you keep the I think it was a penalty, but I would have kept the call on the field as the accurate call. But I get it. But whoever was winning this game was going to be the sacrificial lamb for France anyway. So who cared?
More than likely, yes.
And Ta, who had the goal taken away, is the same guy that missed the sixth shot.
Yes, he did.
For Germany in penalty kicks. So
what has happened to Germany since they won it? They didn't get out of the group stage after they won it the last two times, and now this time they get knocked out in the round of 32. You're used to Germany being a machine, and right now it just doesn't look like it. Yeah. They did control offense, but Paraguay really allowed them to. Paraguay didn't fight for possession. Yeah. They just sat back.
No, not at all.
All right, then we get to the late game Monday. Morocco knocks out the Netherlands.
Probably the game of the tournament so far, in my opinion.
So 1-1, it goes 3-2 on penalty kicks.
Well, I think with this one, Netherlands Gakpo scores in the 72nd minute. Very emotional because he and his partner, they already have one son or one child. I forget if it's a son or daughter, but they lost their unborn son on Saturday. He stayed with the team and wound up scoring in the 72nd minute, which was just such an emotional. You could see the entire team eyeing to the field to be with him. I mean, it was just an incredible moment. I thought they were going to hold on, but then Morocco Diop scored the 91st minute. Again, stoppage time goal to tie it. Then they go to the penalty kicks. And I tell you, this one, they combined for three posts or crossbars. I mean, it was amazing how if it was a post challenge, that was they think they had more of those than actual made kicks. I mean, the one there, the second kick by Morocco, Rahimi took the penalty. Verbrugge made the save, and as he was going down, it sort of slipped through his body a little bit, and as he was trying to move the back of the leg, kicked it into the net, and then eventually. And then the last kick, Sabiri for Morocco, kicks it in to give them the win.
It's odd on penalty kicks that these guys actually missed two in a row.
Yeah.
But the Dutch actually missed the fourth and the fifth shots, that both of them.
Probably the most evenly matched matchup of the tournament up to that point, in my opinion. Well, I think they're both very good teams, and
They're both top 10 FIFA rankings.
It's a tough round of 32 matchup.
Yeah.
Because they're both, like you said, Kev, they're both top 10. They're both really good. They both can go a long way. Somebody has to lose, and this time it's the Dutch.
Yep.
So, Kev, so through Monday we had four games, and we had two games go to penalty kicks.
Yep.
Two games with goals
in stoppage time.
In stoppage time, it's just ridiculous, man. And then we get to today, Tuesday, Kev.
Yep. Norway beats Ivory Coast 2-1. Erling Haaland, a little early this time, only the 86th minute to score the game winner.
The first goal was the beautiful goal in that game.
It was
for each team, actually. Each team's first goal was great. Haaland almost mishit his, but he got it in.
Yeah. I mean, for Haaland, the last 13 games he's played for Norway, going back to October 24, he scored in all 13 games 25 goals in total. Yeah. This guy's just a freaking machine out there.
He's big. He's strong. He's like Thor. He's the real Thor.
Yeah. He almost looks like him with the long blonde hair. Exactly. He got tied up, but he really looks Norwegian too. I mean, he's got that whole thing going for him. And then France, the first blowout we've had in the knockout round.
I thought Ivory Coast was as good, if not the better side for most of this matchup. Ivory Coast had the speed that you could see the difference in speed, and they were able to turn the field very quickly. Norway, again, a little bit more skill perhaps, but the speed I thought was the advantage of Ivory Coast. They had more corners, they had more shots on goal. They did a lot more shots, I should say. They did a lot of things well. Again, a really good matchup, but the Norwegians move on. G
and Kev, Haaland, he almost didn't put enough on the ball to score that goal.
He missed it.
Because the goal, he was actually almost behind the goalie at that point, and the goalie was diving back, and he hit it enough to get it past the goalie, but just enough, a little bit. If he had not put enough on that ball would have gotten saved. But Norway moves on. Yep. And then the Tuesday afternoon game, which we saw, was France beating Sweden 3-0. And so far through the knockout round, this seems to be the most lopsided game so far that we've seen. France kind of controlled most of this game that we saw.
You know, Sweden had
Mbappe with two more goals.
Yeah, I mean, Sweden kind of, it was 1-0. Sweden was hanging in. Then they go to the, then they, Graham Potter comes out, puts out four offensive players. You know they're going to have spots in the back. And you just saw the way France just dominated with that. Because the Swedish goaltender, and I'm blanking on his name, made a few brilliant saves. I mean, you know, he was really, they lost three, they could have lost 7-0 in this game. He was really good. They could not mount an offensive attack. They never could control the ball in midfield. It seemed like France could do whatever they wanted to.
Yep.
And tonight you get Mexico, right?
Mexico, Ecuador, lightning delay to start the game. So we'll see when they can get that game in. And then we wait for Wednesday night and Team USA against Bosnia-Herzegovina.
Look at you. You've been practicing.
I was practicing.
I teased you last week. You threw it back at me. I love it.
Darren, what do you think?
This is a game that, much like we talked about with Canada before, this is a matchup that the U.S. gets that they have to find a way to take advantage of. They're the more talented team. Bosnia can put the ball in the net. They can. They can score. Not that they've done a lot of that in this tournament, but that's how they advanced into it. They knocked out the Italians. I mean, Bosnia-Herzegovina knocked out the Italians to get into this tournament. So, which is no small task. But the United States, with their overall skill and talent, should be more than enough to get by Bosnia and get into that next matchup against Senegal and Belgium. You like what you see from your starters. Now you just got to see if they play well together on tomorrow night.
Yep, I think, you know, like you said, Team USA is probably the more talented team over Bosnia. Bosnia's going to try and make this game physical. We saw that in the group stage. They could be a very physical team. I think if the U.S., like they have in their two wins, if they can get that early goal, doesn't have to be an own goal. You know, they can kick it in themselves. But if the Team USA can get that early lead, I think that could draw Bosnia from playing that defensive, rugged style and maybe open it up a little bit more, and maybe the U.S. could take even more advantage at some point. I think the more open the game is, more advantages to the U.S. If this is tight, if this day is scoreless for a long time, Bosnia can out-physical the U.S., I'm afraid. And, you know, all of a sudden you get one lucky bounce and all of a sudden U.S. is out. So I think the early goal, get up 1-0, they can probably maybe even easily win at that point 3-1.
I'd be surprised if they didn't win this game, G. I really would. I really think that there's no reason. There would be no excuse. This would be a monumental, devastating loss on home soil if they lost this game tomorrow.
Yeah, I would be surprised if they didn't win this game tomorrow. I would be surprised if they didn't win. This is the one I expect them to win. Whether or not they win the next one, we'll see, but I would expect them to win this game tomorrow night. I think this is a matchup that they can handle. So,
yep. Any other games you're looking forward to coming up in the 32?
You know which one I really like, and I think is going to be a really good one, is the I'm sorry, one second. It's Portugal-Croatia.
Yep.
Aging superstars in Modric against Ronaldo going at it. And listen, I know a lot of people have their things about, you know, Messi and Ronaldo and all this stuff and who's a better guy and who's a better teammate. Ronaldo hired two private planes and sent millions of dollars worth of supplies over to Venezuela. I mean, the guy's got a heart of gold, still playing at 41. He's a good guy. I mean, I know Messi's a great guy too. And Modric is another one of those midfielders that's been a star forever, got Croatia into that Final Four a few years back. I think that's a fun matchup because you don't feel like either team's playing great right now, and yet at the same point in time, you think both teams are really good. So it's going to be kind of fun, in my opinion.
Yeah, that was the one I was looking at too, Darren. I think the other one for me would probably be Colombia and Ghana. I think that one's a very interesting matchup. I think Ghana, where they have speed and talent on that team.
Yeah, the Black Colombia, Stars are good.
And Colombia, you know. They somehow pull these out. I mean, that's going to be very, very interesting to watch.
If I was going to give one other one also, it would be the Belgium-Senegal game. I think that Belgium has not been as on it offensively as you would expect. I think Senegal also has a lot of talent on their squad, and that could be an interesting matchup as well. and the U.S. plays the winner of that one. So it's kind of an important one to want to watch as well.
Yes, it is. Gino, any more thoughts?
No, not at this point. I'm enjoying the round of 32. I like the knockout round so far.
Yep. All right.
All right. Let's move over to golf. We had the 2026 Travelers Championship. Victor Hovland wins a playoff. He converted the 54-hole lead into a victory, defeating Scottie Scheffler on the first playoff hole. On Monday morning, after darkness halted play on Sunday, this was caused by an 80-minute weather delay on Sunday. Decisive moment on 18 when Hovland made birdie inside 7 feet. Scheffler missed his from inside three, sealing the win. It's his 8th PGA Tour win. Kev, any comments?
Yeah, Hovland, you know, terrific putt. Surprised that Scotty missed his on Monday morning. Scotty had some big par saves coming down after the weather delay to get himself into the playoff with Hovland. I thought Scheffler post match Monday morning very complimentary to Victor. I tell you, it's been a weird year for Scotty because he won his opening tournament, the American Express, 13 tournaments since. His worst is a tie for 24th. He's had 8 top fours. Among those, 4 top twos. But can't seem to pull out the win. The putter has been ice cold for him most of the year. I mean, he's still striking the ball beautifully, but the putter is just not working for him this year. The high standard he has, you know, to be finishing top five week after weeks in contention. You're surprised when he's not on the leaderboard, but he can't close the deal this year.
However,
he also shot the 60 on Friday, which was he missed a putt that would have gotten him to 59. I mean, you know, he would have been the first guy with 2 sub 60 rounds, I believe. Correct?
Furyk did it, I think.
I didn't know he did it twice. I thought he was the first. Okay, maybe he's the second.
Scheffler now has 35 straight top 25 finishes, the second longest streak in 40 years behind Tiger Woods. So that's a hell of a streak to have. If you're going to have one, that's a hell of a streak to have, I'll tell you.
And Hovland was really good, gracious, in winning, by the way. I knew the crowd was rooting for Scotty. He's the best in the world, but I had some Norwegian flags out there and the rowing and talking about.
Oh, it's great to see the rowers out there.
It was a great thing. It was really kind of cool to watch too, because Victor Hovland's a very talented golfer. And a couple of years ago, and even last year, he was like, you know, he was on the cusp, people were saying, of becoming maybe a chance of being the best in the world. And then Scheffler just kind of went on a trajectory that no one could match.
Yep.
But Hovland on any given tournament can beat anybody. He's got that kind of skill.
Okay. Let's head over to the NBA for a couple of minutes. So the Knicks, locally, they are going. Looks like they're going to wind up keeping Landry Shamet. It's a 4-year, $24 million deal. He was set to become a free agent, unrestricted free agent. So looks like that's not going to happen. The Knicks at that point will have 11 players under contract. The one outlier at this point is Mitchell Robinson. So Mitch looks unlikely at this point that he will be re-signed. It would be without the Knicks going to the second apron is really the key, because he can be, but they would wind up going into the second apron.
It's going to come down to Cat taking a pay cut.
Yeah, they would have to. They'd wind up having to cut a couple of the other guys on the bench, and they would have to rework a couple of contracts. What, Kev?
They still have to fill the spot somehow. If he cut the younger guy,
second round picks,
yeah, but Yeah.
At rookie minimums.
Yeah. That's what it would be.
You know, to me, I know Dolan doesn't want to go with the second apron. That's one thing. But with the way these penalties work and some of those trades, what team made a couple of trades there that got them so far under the second apron? They're saving like $20 million in salary, but like $200 million with the tax.
Was that Charlotte that made the two moves this week?
I think it was Charlotte, yeah.
They traded LaMelo when they traded Bridges.
Yep.
Yeah.
So to me, with Mitch, I love him. He's been a Knick for his career, but with the injury history he has, it's hard to keep him healthy all year. You've got to really watch his minutes, and the foul shooting has become such a problem. It's tough to sign him for the contract he's going to get.
And
Kevin is a guy that can fill that role to an extent. Not as good as Mitch in some ways, but better in others.
It's not even the money part of it. There are other restrictions in there where you can't sign this and you can't do that. And there's a draft
pick with
you. And there's a lot of issues that happen with that. And, you know, if you're Leon Rose and Leon Rose goes to, you know, Dolan and says, I need to do this, it's one thing. But if he's telling him, listen, this is going to restrict how I think this team needs to, then he's not going to come back. And, you know, as the fans, we got to accept that. That's just the way this got to play out. Unfortunately or fortunately, it's just the way it's got to play out, you know?
Yeah, your roster becomes kind of locked. Once you get to that apron, you can do nothing else. And therefore, there would be no moves at the deadline or no moves that they could do anything with. And I understand why they don't want to do it. Obviously, everybody loves Mitch. You root for him. You want him. Yep. You say, how does he not hit a foul shot? You do all those things. But defensively and shot blocking, rebounding, he's a force in there. Hakporti is a big guy. You know, it's not like he can't play the role. So let's see what we get. Well, let's see what happens.
All right. The other big news that came out today actually is LeBron is not going back to the Lakers. He's come out and said he's not going back. He's not resigning. Guys?
I keep seeing rumors. Golden State.
That's the one LeBron, rumor.
AD, and Curry teaming up. I mean, again, he's chasing rings.
Let's find another team I root harder against.
Well, look, the other two teams that keep getting named are Cleveland and Miami. That's the other two teams that keep getting named.
Yeah, sure. He wants to go. Cleveland at least is
hometown. Where he's
hometown. Like that's fine. Miami. You know, what you want to join Giannis?
Well, listen. If he's really trying to chase a ring, serious. Cleveland is probably the place where the team is better suited to try to chase a ring. You know, if he goes to Miami, you know, they're probably still shorthanded there to make a title run.
They still need the backcourt guy,
right? And Golden State, you're looking at a lot of guys there that are not going to be able to make it to a full season.
Yeah,
against a very young core, you know.
You got to go through OKC and you got to go through San Antonio.
Exactly.
It's just harder to go through the West. Listen, I agree. The Knicks won the championship. We're all excited still. I get it. But it's still harder to go through the West.
All right. I'll just mention a couple of the bigger trades that have happened or are happening. Charlotte traded LaMelo Ball and Josh Green to the Hornets. Naz Reid, a lot of picks, 2033 pick, three first round swaps, three second round picks. Charlotte also traded Miles Bridges to the Suns. They got back Grayson Allen and Royce O'Neal and an unprotected pick. In that deal, they also sent a second round pick and a 2029 pick. I mean, they really traded a boatload of picks and players, Darren.
What it kind of tells you is that Charlotte, who was improving and a team that was kind of on the rise to an extent, does not think that what they had could compete with what the Knicks did this year.
Yep.
And I know part of it's the apron, and part of it's saving the money. But part of it's when you're giving up LaMelo Ball, who's hurt a lot, don't get me wrong.
Yep.
But when you're giving up the talent that they gave up in these deals for these picks, it basically said, okay, even if we build around these guys, we're not good enough. We are not going to be able to compete with the Knicks or Boston or Miami at this point. And Miami added Tim Hardaway Jr. Not that it's a huge pickup, but it's another guy on the perimeter that does help them. But Charlotte, it was almost like the Knicks kind of dictated what happened to the Knicks winning kind of dictated what they tried to do in this offseason a little bit, in my opinion.
Yep. I agree. Oklahoma City traded Isaiah Joe for two picks to Detroit.
Again, that's salary related.
Yep. Grizzlies traded Ja Morant to Portland for Jeremiah Grant and Chris Murray.
Not a lot for a guy that was one of the stars, but when you have that many off the field, off the court, I should say, problems, you know, they were just happy to get rid of Ja Morant.
Between the off the court and he's only played about 80 games the last 3 years.
Yeah.
I mean, John needs a new start. Yeah, he needs a fresh start, and so does Memphis.
Yep. And then today, as we get near 6 o'clock is when the signing period started, the Clippers are trading Kawhi Leonard back to Toronto for Brandon Ingram, Grady Dick, two unprotected first-round picks, one pick swap and 2 second-round picks. I love all these swaps and picks.
The minute you say Grady Dick, both Kevin and I, like 2 5-year-olds, giggle. Anyway, we move on.
But Kawhi going idiots. Back.
I look at you right away. I see you giggle. I'm giggling too. Because
Kawhi going back to Toronto.
The fact that Gio said that with a straight face.
Gino did. I give him
credit.
Like a pro. I mean, Toronto's all in, I guess. Again, Kawhi's not a guy you've been able to count on in the last few years to give you the amount of games that you need. But
that's it.
Listen, he's still a good player when he plays, but he's getting older and he hasn't been healthy.
Yeah. I think that's a pretty good return for the Clippers.
Absolutely. 2 unprotected firsts. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
And the ever-popular pick swap.
The Nets also signed Keon Ellis tonight, which is a big deal. I'm kidding. It's 2 years, $18 million. He's a 3-and-D player. He's an NBA guy. He'll find a spot off the bench. You know, the Nets are spending money. There you go. They're saying, well, we've got to compete with the Knicks. I'm kidding.
All right. That's about it for NBA, unless you guys have any other picks, any other points right now.
Nope. The fact that there's no rumor of LeBron coming to the Knicks is the most exciting thing for me. I don't want to. I've never rooted for him before. I don't want to start now.
No.
All right. Kev, got some hidden gems for us tonight.
Yep. NHL. Jerome Iginla. One of Darren's favorite players.
One of my top three of all time.
He's got 3 kids. All 3 have now been drafted. Tij, I don't know how you pronounce that. 2024, he went number 6 overall.
Yep.
2026, Joe went number 65 overall. And his daughter, Jade, in 2026, went number 18 overall in the PWHL draft. So congrats to Jerome Iginla. The hockey genes are run through the second generation there. Over in baseball, we can talk about this team in a minute, but the disastrous series between the Cubs and Mets last week. It took Dansby Swanson 60 days to get his first 14 RBIs. It took him 2 days to get 15. Terrible. Box score last night between the Dodgers and the Athletics. Batting 7th, playing 3rd for the Dodgers, Max Muncy. For the A's, batting 7th, playing 3rd, Max Muncy. That was not a typo.
The Dodgers have the better Max Muncy.
Yes, they do. I think we brought it up before. The other amazing thing is that they both share the August 25th birthday, just 12 years apart. And a great call over the weekend. Max Kepler had just come off the second game since his suspension. They're playing against the Diamondbacks were playing the Rays. Yep. And doing the game for Tampa was our old friend Dwayne Statt. Remember him with the Yankees for a few years there and a bunch of other teams as well. And Brian Anderson was a color guy. And Kepler hits one 406 feet to the wall, caught by the center fielder. And Anderson with the line of the night. 80 games ago, that's probably a homer.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome when you come off the PEDs and that comes out. I thought it was great.
That was a great one. So short list, but those are my gems for the week.
And they're all great.
Oh, thank you very much.
You're welcome, bro. You're welcome. All right,
move over to some baseball. So before today, Yankees at 48-36, game and a half behind Tampa because they've now lost five in a row. 2-8 in their last 10. Mets at 35-50, 1-9 their last 10. Darren, let's start with you. Let's start with the Yankees.
There's nothing really to talk about. They suck right now. Last week we're sitting there talking about, hey, they're holding up without Judge. Now all of a sudden when Goldschmidt and Bellinger aren't really hitting and Chisholm's getting himself thrown out of games because he's a moron, nothing's really happening. They've lost, what is it, five in a row? That'll be six after tonight. Because Schwitler got rocked, which you don't expect. Last week he lost, but he lost on four unearned runs because the day after the Mets had six infielder errors, the Yankees said, hold my beer, and they committed only five. It's just, you know, the talent is there for the Yanks. I'm not really worried about it. I just, the fact that they lose to the Red Sox just kills me. I could take a four-game sweep to anybody. I could take two back-to-back four-game sweeps against anybody. Just not them. Just not those freaking jerks from Boston. I can't handle it. It drives me nuts. Still not in love with the bullpen. The fact that I see Blackburn in leverage situations just kills me. And yet this is where we go because Duvall's so bad. And it's like... Blackburn's probably the third or fourth best reliever on this team. That's how bad the pen is, Gino. I know everybody has a bad pen, but this one's on the bottom of the list, in my opinion. Judge is still a couple weeks away. They're not going to rush him back before the All-Star game. We knew that anyway.
No way.
We get him back before the end of the month. Gino's hoping for his fantasy team. I'm hoping for it for the Yankees. Would like to see just a little bit more consistency at the plate from some of these guys. And is it time to kind of make a deal and get rid of Austin Wells and just get him out of here? And I still consider the Devers move something I would think about. Those are the two things I would think about.
I think a catcher's coming in before the trade deadline. So I think that'll take care of the Wells situation. I understand they've lost five in a row, but, you know.
You go through swoons. I don't get too
much. They're 12 over,
It's the Red Sox, the part that hurts. The rest of it I can live with. I can't handle losing to the Red Sox.
They're tied with 48 wins, which is the most in the American League. It's very difficult for me to, you know. Get as emotional as you,
The Red Sox suck. And you know what? The American League is so weak. They're lucky the American League is as weak as it is. Kev will sit there and tell you that's why the Mets are struggling, because the National League is so strong. Right, Kev?
Hell no.
Wait. Time out. Wait. Before we get to the National League, before today, Texas is leading the West at 43-42. And the White Sox are leading the Central at 44-39.
You know what? I'm happy for the White Sox. I really am.
And this is with Murakami on the IL for the last month.
They've had so many young players step up on that squad. I'm happy for them. They've been so bad for so long. Good for the White Sox.
Pretty impressive, I'll tell you. All right, so now we can get to the National League. Kev?
I heard the Mets may have fired the manager last week.
I think so. I think I heard that too.
After that brutal Cubs series,
yet the GM stays intact.
Yeah. to me here. Okay, so they fire Mendoza. Stern stays. They bring in Andy Green, And they've already announced that he's here for the rest of the regular season. Then he's going to go back to the front office. So he's David Stern's mole for the rest of the year in the clubhouse, isn't he?
Pretty much.
Stearns is clueless. You know, Friday night, after everything that happened, Zach Thornton comes up, throws a gem. Gives up hits to the first three guys, you know, Harper and Schwarber, and I forget who was leading off. Sells in, gives them six innings, one run. About as good as they've had from starting a pitcher in how long. They lost the game 2-1, okay. After the game, well, let's send them back down because we need to bring up a fresh arm. We know the starting four more days. You can't bring it back up unless somebody mysteriously goes, you know, this is the type of shit that he doesn't understand the clubhouse. He doesn't understand the human element. Everything is by stupid analytics. The analytics say we need another pitcher in here. Why is Zach Thornton up here after he pitched a hell of a game Friday? Why is he not up here? They need a starter in time for Tuesday, I think it is, or Wednesday. Why?
Jorge Posada came out this week and ripped Major League Baseball, saying it's an unwatchable brand because the analytics and the nerds are ruining the sport. Kevin has just backed up Jorge Posada without even knowing it.
I mean, somebody posted, you know, yes, Pete Alonso still sticks in my craw. There's no reason he shouldn't be here rather than the mess we've got at first base. But Stearns does not like first baseman. With Milwaukee, he were his starting first baseman with Milwaukee. Adam Lind, Chris Carter, Eric Thames, Jesus Aguiar, Justin Smoke, Daniel Vogelback, and 2 years of Rowdy Tellez.
Rowdy might have been the best one.
That's the crap he plays at first. No wonder he's happy with Jared Young and Polanco, who's ever played there. Who knows if he's got ever got to play there.
And that's why Polanco was brought in to play first base, Kev.
By the way, Eric Chavez has been going off on Stearns in a lot of these interviews. I've been seeing excerpts all over the place. I don't know if you've seen them, Kev.
I saw the one. Nasty. I mean, he was ripping the stuff with Soto. I don't know if you saw that one. Soto, between if he's not up that inning, he's in the clubhouse, on the couches, relaxing, talking to the assistant GMs and everything else. It's like, why aren't you on the team? And he goes to Stearns about it, and Stearns says, well, you know, you can't expect Soto to be like everybody else. I mean, really? Come on. Anyway. I ranted last week about the Mets. I'm not ranting this week.
All right. Just as a note, so the Phillies have played really good ball. They're only 3.5 out of the Braves.
They won tonight, too.
Milwaukee, before today, is 20 games above 500. I think that's pretty surprising, 51-31. You know, Dodgers are
– it's amazing they lose Stearns and Council, and they keep winning.
Both of those guys went with organizations that were going to have more money and better chances to win.
Yeah.
Dodgers now at 55-30, by the way, opening up a huge gap.
Shocking. I didn't think the Dodgers were going to be good this year. That's a surprise.
Yeah. All right, Darren, you got some buried treasures for us.
Yeah, I got to start with one because Gino loves it when I talk about Bob Gibson in 1968, but I'm going to do it just one more time. Do you know, because I didn't know this, Bob Gibson was never removed for another pitcher during the entire season? He started 37 games, completed 31 of them. The other six, he was lifted for a pinch hitter. He never got taken out in an inning, never got relieved by another pitcher. I did not know that.
That's that blew a great my stat. Mind.
Would, as a manager, would you go out to the mound and take him out?
Oh, I'd be afraid. I'd be petrified. Just a stupid thing in college baseball, just because I came across it. The 2018 Oregon State Beavers, okay? I know – led off with Stephen Kwan, Caden Grenier batted second. Nick Madrigal was third. Trevor Lanark was fourth. Adley Rushman was fifth. Zach Taylor was ninth. I mean, they had four everyday major league players and a fifth one that's been up and down a little bit. I didn't realize Oregon State had that kind of pop in their lineup, but that was just an interesting point. The next one's a quick trivia question for my friend, well, for either one of you, actually. Who's the only player in Major League Baseball history to hit 360 and over, have 30 steals and 40 homers in one season?
Wait, one more time?
He hit over 360, had 30 over 30 steals and over 40 homers in one season. Yes, Brady, we all saw him play.
Brady Anderson.
Not George Brett, not Ricky Henderson.
Brady Anderson.
Not Brady Anderson. Larry Walker.
Ooh.
It's a pretty good question, I thought. I didn't realize
that. That's a good one. I like that. Good job, Dave.
And then the final one I'm going to give you is yesterday was the 121st anniversary of the Moonlight Graham one-inning game. For those who remember the Field of Dreams movie, in June 29, 1905, the real-life Archie Moonlight Graham made his Major League debut in the ninth inning as a substitute in right field. Ball never left the infield. That part is all true. Never got the back, and he was sent to the minors the next day. So it's a little bit of an inconsistency from the movie there. He spent another 4 years in the minors, and then he quit baseball, and he practiced medicine in Chisholm, Minnesota. But it's the 121st anniversary of the Moonlight Graham game.
Wow.
And those were be my treasures for this week. Thank you, sir.
All right. Anything else, Darren?
So after, well, you know, 132 years of racing at Aqueduct, we had the last race, you know, over the weekend. And the last horse to win, Assume Nothing, the number four horse, ridden by Jamie Rodriguez. You know, thing about it is Aqueduct had it stay. It's become a crap track. Nobody goes there anymore and all that type of stuff. Nobody really goes to the track much anymore outside of, like, the major ones for big events. But in the last 50 years, I have the list of top 10 jockeys for the most wins at Aqueduct. You don't have to give them to me. But does anybody know who the number one is? Wins at Aqueduct over the last 50 years, 1976 to 2026.
I remember I saw the thing. Was it Mike Luzzi?
No. Mike Luzzi, a very popular wrong answer. He was fifth.
Then it was, was it Miggs?
He had 1367.
Was it Migliori then?
Richard Migliori, 2,238. 600 almost more than any other jockey at Aqueduct. Wow. Angel Cordero Jr. was second. Manuel Franco third. Chop Chop was four. Luzzi was fifth. John Velasquez, six. Robbie Davis, seven. Jorge Velasquez, eight. Irad Ortiz Jr., nine. And Ramon Dominguez, 10. But Richard Migliori, the winningest jockey in the last 50 years at Aqueduct Racetrack.
Wow.
Yep. Everyone else was close. He was 600 wins ahead. I was surprised. I didn't think he had that big a lead. And that's all I have for horse racing.
Okay.
Anything else? Anybody else have anything want to wrap up before? Anything to say before we wrap up? We are Sports Kings from Queens. Darren, Kevin, Gino, talk about the wonderful, wild, and wacky world of sports. A wacky world where we close with Aqueduct. Anyway. Please download the podcast anywhere you get a podcast, whether it be an Apple Podcast, Spotify, TuneIn, whatever you like. We post a lot on social, even though I haven't done a lot the last couple of days. But Kev gave us the firing of the Mets manager and a little bit of World Cup. So keep it going, and we're going to keep posting up as much as possible. Like our stuff. Share our stuff. If you don't like it, pretend you like it. Share it anyway. And without any further ado, may your sports be with you.